Welcome to the October 21st meeting of the Tompkins 2014 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. Please, if you have any cell phones or other electronic devices, please silence them. The emergency exits are to my right in the back of the room and to my left in the front of the room. I wondered if you would please stand with me and recite the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Clerk will call the roll, please.
Mr. Klein? Mrs. McBean-Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Ms. Robertson has asked to be excused. Mr. Robison?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Mr. Stein? Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
I am here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
12 members present.
We have a quorum. Presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
I'm very pleased to have a proclamation tonight, which I'd like to read. It recites, whereas October is National Energy Awareness Month, and October 30th is designated as National Weatherization Day, and whereas the County of Tompkins has long recognized the plight of families and individuals with low incomes in meeting their home energy needs, and whereas households with low incomes spend a disproportionate percentage of their annual income on home energy bills, and whereas the United States Department of Energy developed the Weatherization Assistance Program in 1976 as the federal government's cost-effective permanent solution for reducing the heavy energy burden on Americans with low incomes. Whereas locally, Tompkins Community Action's weatherization program has provided energy efficiency upgrades to 2,130 housing units in Tompkins County since 2000. And whereas this program not only saves energy through advanced technologies to improve the energy affordability for families and low incomes, but also saves lives and improves the health and safety of families by identifying carbon monoxide hazards, poor indoor air quality, mold, and other health threats. And whereas the Weatherization Assistance Program keeps jobs and dollars in local communities by operating through a network of approximately 74 well-trained program providers serving every community in the state. Now, therefore, I, Michael Lane, as chair of the Tompkins County Legislature, do hereby proclaim October 30th, 2014, as Weatherization Day in Tompkins County. And we signed and sealed this on the 21st day of October 2014. Do we have someone here to receive this from Tompkins Community Action? There's Lee Dillon.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Would
you like to say a few words?
Thanks. Just a couple.
Thank you very much. I'd like to introduce Frank Howe, sitting in the back of the room, as our new Energy Services Director. Frank's been with us a few months, but not very long. We pulled him out of retirement to have him run our energy services department right now, and I hope for many years to come. I want to encourage all of you to contact us, 273-8816, and I encourage you to get a free home energy assessment done so that you also can start saving some energy and reduce your carbon footprint. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Lee. Thank you for the good work that you're organization does in helping folks that need to save energy costs.
Thank you.
I'm not aware of the need for an executive session tonight, John or Joe. Let's move to privilege of the floor. This is the opportunity for the public to speak to us on topics of their choice. We ask that you please sign one of these blue cards that's in the back of the room. If you haven't done that and you want to speak, please do that and hand it up. There are rules that you're agreeing to abide by that say you agree to a three-minute time limit. You agree not to raise your voice. You agree not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language. or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of the peace. If you agree not to speak about county personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. After 3 minutes, you agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor. You agree that if you cause a disruption and are asked to leave, you will leave the chambers. We have a time clock to time the 3 minutes, at the end of which time you'll hear an audible signal, and we ask you to conclude at that point if you haven't already. The first card I have is from Larry Roberts.
So I'm here to speak on in support of the resolution about the climate survey from the WDIC. And as I said earlier at a committee meeting, I'm really excited that we're taking the step to do the second climate survey. I think it will tell us a lot about how the entire workforce is doing and feeling about diversity and the issues that they think are important, including elected officials as employees of the county. So please, when you see the survey, take the survey. The WDIC has really moved forward since you adopted the policies that we brought before you a while ago, and the climate survey is a concrete example of the kind of work that the committee is doing under the leadership of Leslie McBean Claiborne and with the support of staff. And I think this is yet another way for the county to demonstrate its commitment to diversity through inclusion. So I hope you will support the resolution. Thanks.
Thank you, Larry. Cynthia Coleman.
Thank you.
You need to come to the microphone, please.
Move it up, Mike.
You can adjust it.
Thank you. Several of us are here from Tompkins-Cortland Community College tonight. We're adjunct instructors, and like everybody else at the college, we greatly appreciate the support that the county board has offered to TC3 over the years. We wanted to let you know that we're attempting to organize a union local. We're the only group of employees at the college who aren't unionized. Full-time faculty are, support staff are, administrators are. So we're trying to get organized as well. We teach the majority of classes at the college, and a number of adjunct instructors find their situation financially difficult, especially in light of the energy and commitment that it takes for us, like anyone else, to provide our students with a quality education. We're aware of the support that the board has offered for unions and union campaigns for public employees in the past, and of the support that you've offered for living wage initiatives. And we hope that you'll offer us support too, at least moral support. And we certainly wanted to let the county board let you know what you were doing as we're starting to negotiate with the college. Thank you.
Thank you. Next I have Nancy Crave. Crave? Is it Crave or Crane?
Yes, good evening. Again, thank you for your support for the TC3. I'm also an adjunct at...
Can you put the mic up a little higher?
Okay. Is that better?
I've forgotten to ask people to please state what municipality you're from.
Okay, so I... Or can I just hold it? Yeah, okay. So I live in the city of Ithaca, and I also am an adjunct at TC3. I'm an adjunct at two universities, TC3 and SUNY Cortland. And I just wanted to talk a little bit about my situation so that you get an idea of what many of the adjuncts' lives are like. We are very underpaid. TC3 adjuncts don't even have health insurance. Fortunately, I work for SUNY Cortland, which cares enough about its employees to give us health insurance, which is a good thing. So anyways, between the two colleges, I'm teaching 18 credits currently, Full-time at SUNY Cortland is considered 12 credits. Full-time at TC3 is considered 15. I'm teaching 18 credits, but earning a lot less than any of the full-timers. So in order to compensate for that, on the weekends, I also have my own business, and I sell at the Ithaca Farmers Market, and I make my own artwork and sell that. So basically, I work 7 days a week. I teach during the day. At home, I come home. I make things to sell on the weekend, and on the weekend, I put in, you know, 8 hours, days each day working. So it's so that's kind of the cost to me and my family of not being paid a fair wage. And, you know, it doesn't just affect me and my family, though it does, in a way, impact my students. I try to give them the best that I can, but, you know, if you have this many commitments, you're not there for as long of an office hour, or if they can't make your office hours, being able to be there for them is harder. So I think that if we were paid better wages, we wouldn't have to overextend ourselves. And I guess the other thing that I wanted to talk about is how we don't really know what our teaching load will be for the year. I just got this semester, I'm teaching two classes. Next semester, it will be, I'm almost out of time. It will be cut down to one. So you really don't know what you're going to earn, and it's hard to plan and take care of your family like that. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments. Teresa Ault.
Yes, I'm Teresa Ault. I live in the city of Ithaca, and I'm here to speak also about, on behalf of the adjuncts at TC3. I heard about the situation through the Workers' Center, where I'm on the leadership team. And I just want to say I think the county will need to remind the administration at TC3 that if and when a majority of adjuncts sign cards requesting that they have a union, the administration should recognize that union. It is county policy. It's the right thing to do. And it will lead to a better teaching force. Thank you.
Thank you, Teresa. Greg Weatherby.
I'm Greg Weatherby. I'm a resident of the city of Ithaca. I have been an adjunct at TC3 for over 7 years, and I'm here to ask for your support of our adjunct union and to ask you to contact TC3's President Carl Haynes and TC3's Board of Trustees on our behalf. Last year at this time, I was in Memorial Sloan Kettering with stage 4 cancer, fighting for my life. I'm a cancer survivor. But were it not for the great insurance policy I have from my other employer, SUNY Cortland, I would probably be dead or dying today. TC3 does not offer any benefits, including affordable health insurance, to its adjunct instructors. A union could help us with this option. Because of my cancer treatment, I was unable to work for 2 semesters. Upon my return, I had to beg to be reassigned courses at TC3. One of the deans told me he was reluctant to rehire me because of my illness, which was sad and immoral, as it was illegal. But I didn't dare file a complaint. I finally got an assignment of one course for 2 semesters. For the period of January 2014 to August 2014, TC3 paid me a salary of $6,000. This is after more than 5 years of continual service and after being out of work for cancer treatment. In addition, the college does not recognize seniority among adjuncts and assigns courses arbitrarily. Favoritism and nepotism are common. Job security is absent. It's another issue a union could help us address. Catastrophic illness is financially devastating even under the best of circumstances, but if you are one of the working poor, as our adjuncts are, it becomes even more so. TC3 does not pay its adjuncts a living wage. Some of us are on food stamps and utilize other taxpayer-supported services just to survive. TC3 does not pay its adjuncts an equitable wage. We are paid by the course, we are paid less than half of what full-time salary, full-time faculty are paid. There's no such thing as equal pay for equal work. There's no logic to this situation. It is immoral, inequitable, and exploitive. Please use your influence and contact President Haynes and the TC3 Board of Trustees and urge them to support and recognize the new TC3 adjunct union. Ask them not to use taxpayer money to delay recognizing a union that the majority of adjuncts have already approved. Ask them to take the moral high ground. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Weatherby. I have one blue card left. If there's anyone else who wants to speak after this, please send up a blue card. This is for Sherry Tactle.
Good evening. My name is Sherry Tactle, and I reside in the municipality of Dryden. I started my work as a part-time, I don't use the word adjunct because I am a part-time faculty member, although according to the faculty, we really are not part of their faculty. We have no voice on campus. We are not invited to faculty meetings and on days where faculty comes together to talk about what's going to go on campus. We are told about it, but we are really not encouraged to attend, and we're not paid for that extra time. That being said, I just want to let you know that President Haynes will be receiving, and the Board of Trustees will be receiving a letter telling them that we do have over a majority of part-time faculty who have signed on to be represented by our union. Just one other thing, as I said, I have been a part-time faculty since 2007, and one thing I want to bring to your attention is that I am an English instructor. Right now, there are approximately 10 full-time instructors in the English department and over 50 adjunct or part-time instructors. Now, when you think about, consistency and continuity, it doesn't exist. People are coming and going because they need to find better work. I was very, very lucky after a few years at TC3 with that being my sole employer, and I was basically going through my savings and retirement money very quickly. I was very lucky to get a job at SUNY Cortland. I still am a part-time faculty because teaching is where my heart is. And so I'm not ready to give that up. But I stand with my part-time faculty brothers and sisters. And again, I urge you to contact the president of TC3 as well as the board, and please ask them not to spend taxpayer dollars fighting for what, fighting against us, because we only want to make that college better. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That's all I have. Let's move. I don't see any municipal officials that are here to talk to us on privilege of the floor, unless I've missed someone. Let's move to privilege of the floor for legislators. Jim Dennis.
Thank you, Michael. I want to talk about one of my colleagues here this evening. Leslyn McBean Claiborne will be on October 27th at 7 p.m. doing a one-woman show at the Kitchen Theater. You're supposed to applaud now. The title of the show is What Took You So Long? And it is directed by Holly Adams, a name that I have more than a passing interest in the Kitchen Theater. And I am hoping to encourage all of us here to take an evening and go to the Kitchen Theater at 7 p.m. on October 27th and catch the act of our colleague here. I love people on stage, and nothing better than one of our own doing that. So please do that.
Thank you. Others? Carol Chalk.
Yeah, I just want to say a word about the polling location on South Hill. Many of you know that now it's part of my district. And in the past, I don't know how as long as I can remember, the polling location there was at the South Hill School. Fairly recently, while the school itself is ADA compliant and accessible to everybody. The entrance for polling is the lower level. You have to go down a steep hill and then up some steps. And while there's a ramp there that turned out to be on an inspection, a recent inspection, I think that Larry Roberts may have helped with, to be not fully compliant. There wasn't time for this year to build something that would be compliant, so that polling location has been moved to the library. Residents are very concerned about parking there, and so if there are people watching, we are working on finding some parking spots that would be temporary spots that would be either bagged meters or a nearby lot that there would be some spots that were marked for people to go into and out of the polls with the amount of time needed. So I just wanted to let people know that and thank our Board of Elections for responding to the concerns of the residents. They also will be working with the school district. The principal of the school is very interested, and we'll be working together during the course of this year to bring it back to the South Hill School. Thank you.
Will Burbank.
Thank you, Mike. I want to thank the folks that spoke to us tonight about the situation at TC3. I, just speaking for, as one person, was disturbed to learn that the situations in which people are working. I have enormous respect for the TC3 as an organization. This body has heard much in terms of the budgetary situation, and I know they're feeling many stresses. I'm also aware that that the situation of using adjunct teachers is not limited to TC3. It's become a huge phenomenon around the country, and that's something we really haven't come to grips with. And I hope that we can move forward on this and provide justice and equity for the folks doing this very important service, just as part of the mix as we also deal with the budgetary stresses that organization that institution is experiencing. So it's going to be an important few months. Thank you.
Lesson McGee and Claiborne.
What's well said, Will. Thank you very much for acknowledging that. I just had a question for Carol. Carol, did you say the polling place is moved to the Tompkins County Public Library? Is that what you said?
Yes, it is moved to the public library.
Thank you.
Julie Kiefer.
Thank you. Homeowners with private wells are responsible for maintaining their own water supplies and testing the safety. And Cooperative Extension, as it often does, is having a class that is very useful for the public with private wells on Wednesday, October 22nd, that's tomorrow, from 6:30 to 8:30 at 4-H Acres, which is 418 Lower Creek Road in Kiwanis Hall. There will be a class for families and individuals who want to learn how best to take care of their wells, what to test for, and how groundwater contamination happens. So it's good to register ahead of time by calling Cooperative Extension 272-2292. There's no cost for this program. It's definitely an important one. Thanks.
Anyone else? Kathy Luz Herrera.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to thank the members of the Can I call you all temporary? No. I agree that adjunct is a funny name. Anyway, for you all coming out, and there's a couple of questions that are brought up for me, but first I want to kind of out myself. I attended TC3 a long time ago, long enough ago that I can't remember exactly when it was. I took a social studies class from Cynthia Coleman. It was probably more than 10 years ago, and I'm thinking to myself, Cynthia was probably an adjunct then, and she's still an adjunct now. Nothing personal, Cynthia. I'm just trying to think and wrap my head around the notion that we've got a group of folks that have been teaching, many of them 7 or more years, that are not getting benefits. And I love TC3, and as everyone around the table here knows, it contributes a tremendous amount to the economic vitality of our region. So when I hear that folks are seeking to organize as a union member and activist myself, I completely support it. When I hear y'all ask for help from us, it makes me wonder, you know, what I can do. I heard specifically requests to make phone calls, and I can do that. I also, and I may have misunderstood this part, but it sounds like there's cards that are going to be handed in, and it sounds like, from vaguely what I remember from my ILR classes, you can get cards, and if you get over a certain number of a majority and you turn them in, an employer has the option. And in this case, the employer being TC3, one of the things we could do if we wanted to call would be to urge them to recognize that unit as being, elected to represent y'all without having to go through the recognition process, which is arduous and expensive for everybody. So I may be misunderstanding that, and I think there's going to be a lot of questions, and I appreciate y'all coming out. I think the public needs to hear about this, too, because teachers are maligned. I mean, let's face it, the whole business about fight for tenure for college folks and other things have made me realize how little we value our educators. And I guess that lines right up with how we don't value healthcare workers and we don't value daycare workers. And all that should change. And if some of it can change due to the courage and willingness of these fine people, I won't say at least one, because I probably had 10 different professors, and all of them had skill and passion and a kind of persistence in sticking with people at the level that they were at that I think is worthy of not just emulation but continued support. So if there's any way that I, as a member of the legislature, can find to support y'all in your efforts, I will. And Carl Haynes knows me as he knows many of us around the room and many people out in the public. So I hope we can find a way to see to it that y'all get a living wage and hopefully maybe some benefits commensurate with your service. So good luck. Thanks for your courage. And I have one more thing. This is a fun thing. Okay?
Yes, ma'am.
Halloween's coming up. I found out, okay, my listserv is the Fall Creek listserv, and there's a lot of young families on the listserv and everything, and somebody printed something about a teal pumpkin project. Is anybody going to be nodding their head around here? Because it's rare that I'm way ahead of the curve, but it's only because of my constituents. It turns out there's a lot of people that had, young people have food allergies. You're laughing, but it's true. They have food allergies, or, you know, their parents don't want them coming home with a sugar rush, and then everybody in the family is going to have tons of candy. So the idea is to come up with non-candy Halloween treats or non-food treats. And the teal pumpkin is you can just Google it and you can find, there's a little poster you can print out. If you have non-candy treats or non-food treats, you can put it there. And, for example, I didn't know, but some of the treats that I routinely provide or can be considered helpful to folks that have gluten allergies or, you know, have nut allergies. You just have to kind of be careful how you do it. I've even got some that are kosher. I didn't know it. Stuff I already have. The stuff I don't have is things like stickers and pencils and things like that are non-food items. But I started investigating it. I've already got my candy in for this year. But I think through the year I'm going to try and pick up some more of the non-food treats. And if you want to find out something about this besides teal pumpkin, you can Google something like non-food treats, and there's a blog at foodallergy.org. Anyway, we're Ithaca, and, you know, if there's a way that we can find to address the needs of a wide range of people, we're going to find it. So welcome to Teal Pumpkin Land, y'all.
Thank you. Anyone else? I'd like to speak for just a second. What I'd like to talk about briefly is the election coming up in November. We know we have candidates. But there also is a proposition on the ballot for people to decide about whether the Constitution should be amended with the proposed redistricting change which the legislature has put forth. I hope people would take a chance to look at that very, very carefully. Good government groups, frankly, are split on this. Many good government groups feel that this should be voted down because it's not really an independent group. There was a lawsuit that made the Board of Elections at the state level take out the word independent from the language on the ballot, talking about this commission as being an independent group. Other good government groups, such as the League of Women Voters, have said, well, it's a step in the right direction. I personally will be voting against this because I think we can do better. And if we do pass this and enshrine it in the Constitution, it's going to be all the harder to change to have a true independent commission such as there are in many other states. So I just wanted to speak to that and hope people will pay attention to that and vote as they think is proper on that and not miss it on the ballot. I don't think we have a special topical presentation tonight. I think we have a number of people out here tonight who would like to are here for the Human Rights Commission's bylaws. And I'm trying to decide whose committee that's in.
It's
Peter.
Ah, yes, it's Peter's. Peter's got his hand up. Peter, I wondered if you would, if we could advance that and if you would move that tonight.
Actually, when you, I intended to pull that from the agenda.
Okay. Do you want to speak to any reason that you're planning to do that?
Yes. I mean, I'll talk about that in my report, but I just
well,
don't.
I know there's some folks here tonight.
Right. Then I believe it needs more work by the committee. There were some issues that came up that remain unresolved, and I think that it would be premature to consider it at this time. I'm sure that we can consider it in the next at the next meeting of the legislature.
Okay, so you'll be withdrawing that then?
Yes.
Thank you. I wanted to get that out. For my report, I want to mention that we are going to have the photo of the legislature. It's going to be on November 6th at our next meeting at what time?
5 o'clock.
At 5 o'clock. So gussie up and come on up and let's have the picture. Hope we can get all 14 of us plus our staff and others that we always have the photo of each elected legislature. I'd like to announce that tomorrow at the Tompkins County Public Library at, help me, Marcia, is it 6:30? 7 o'clock. At 7 o'clock, there'll be a reading of the Civil War Commission's Language of War program. It's the last scheduled one that we have. We've been around the county doing it. This is the first one that we're doing actually in the city. We'd like to invite you to the Board Warner Room. It takes about an hour. It's interesting. It was written, of course, by and put together by Carol Kamen, our county historian. So come on down, spend an hour with us, and learn about what people were thinking about and talking about during the Civil War. I have one appointment. No, I'm sorry, that's an advisory board appointment. Let's move on then to reports by county staff.
Mike?
Certainly.
Over here. Can I just ask a question?
Sure.
You said the date November 6th, and I thought I had another 2 weeks to announce this. Just yesterday, may I make an announcement?
Sure.
About an event that relates to the legislature some. The Stewart Park Trailhead dedication will be occurring on November 6th at 12:30. They just picked that date yesterday, and as people in this body will recall, we took up a collection and honored the recent outgoing legislators with bricks and for Frank Proto, a paver at that trailhead. And then there is a big interpretive sign honoring Stu Stein. And then there are other people who have supported the creation of the trail and the trailhead. So that dedication will be at 12:30
hopefully the weather will cooperate on November 6th, and I apologize for not connecting that Thursday was after, still before our next meeting.
Go to the dedication pavilion. Of the trailhead and then
it's right
get gussied up and come in for the picture. How's that?
That's right. It's near the large pavilion.
Leslie?
Okay, so I'm a little confused about my calendar. Our meeting is the Thursday?
Yes. On account of the election being on Tuesday.
Right, I know.
And we didn't want to flip it to Wednesday because we couldn't have the broadcast because City has that
City
Wednesday.
Thank you.
So like we did last year, we're going to move it to Thursday.
Thank you very much.
Kathy?
I'll be here Wednesday night.
Okay, and the photo is at 5?
Yes.
Got it.
Okay. Our county administrator is Joe Mariana. Do you want to talk to us tonight, Joe?
Briefly. Thank you. Two very different topics tonight. Actually, three. I want to welcome Deb Prado, our newish personnel commissioner, who's here tonight. I just learned tonight that she's now a resident, the newest resident of Tompkins County. So welcome to Tompkins County. I did want to tell you that Maureen Reynolds and Greg Potter were both in Albany today to accept the Cheryl Steinbeck Annual Archives Award presented by the New York State Archives and Archives Partnership Trust. The award was given, and I'm going to circulate what's kind of a selfie here from Maureen. She took a picture of the award as it was being handed out, so I'm going to circulate that. But the award was for excellence in local government records management. The award was made to recognize the pioneering work that's been done in Tompkins County to move from a very paper-intensive process to an electronic records management system, making our records more accessible to the people that need to use them and more affordable to the people that need to maintain them. The award also recognizes the work that's been done relatively quietly, not only to master this science within Tompkins County government, but also to transfer this technology to smaller governments throughout Tompkins County. So at this point, I think all of the other local governments in Tompkins County are beginning to use digital records management, thanks to Maureen Reynolds, Greg Potter, Aurora Valente, Alana Kogan, and many others who have been involved in this really remarkable process. So it also speaks to the legislature's commitment to put resources behind this to help secure grants and, again, to supplement those grants with local dollars to make this possible. We're all the beneficiaries of the work that's been done, so I just thought we should help them celebrate this award. If you see our attendees, a pat on the back is certainly an appropriate thing for us all to do. So I wanted to congratulate everybody who was involved in that project. And after I do that, I'm glad you gave me pause because I have my second topic is very different than the first. It's the Ebola situation. So I wanted to take a breath and a pause between those two topics. I think everybody here is aware how central our health department is to the coordination of preparedness efforts in this county. Frank Krupa has been very good about briefing Health and Human Services. He had a leadership briefing the other day. And today in a media roundtable, we also briefed the community on preparedness actions that are occurring at the local level involving virtually all of the providers and institutions in this community who have been very vigilant in terms of their preparation in case there is any kind of evidence of the Ebola here. The health department is working with a coalition of healthcare, academic, and first responders to develop strategies to respond to an event of a confirmed case. They're monitoring guidance from CDC and the New York State Department of Health, disseminating that information to all of the players in this community who need to be kept on top of things. And again, they've done an excellent job in communicating in a very calm and patient way because I think the worst thing that can happen here is for any kind of a panic. And Frank Krupa and the health department has been very good about reminding people that we've been in the business of monitoring and containing communicable diseases for a very long time. So this really isn't new to our health department, which means that they're very good at their response to it. So I just wanted to brief you on that. I'm sure as the days go on, Frank will continue to be very communicative about the efforts that are occurring in the health department and elsewhere. So I just wanted to bring you up to speed on that. And I think that's my very eclectic report tonight.
Questions for Joe? Thank you, Joe.
Thanks.
Jonathan Wood is our county attorney.
I do not have a report.
John, do you want to speak about the item we're going to have, or do you want to wait for that on the repeal of the override?
I could talk about it. Under the law, as you all know, that we passed a local law overriding the tax cap, which we've done every year. Under the new legislation for this year, if you're going to have a budget which is under the tax cap and individuals in the community are going to take advantage of that very small refund which they would get from the state, you have to repeal the local law that you passed. So we have a draft of a proposed local law repealing, as well as a resolution, as well as a resolution setting the public hearing. So that will come. And when it really has to be done is at the time the finance director certifies our that our budget is under the cap. He also needs to certify that there was either not a local law or that if there was a local law, it was repealed. So expect to see a resolution repealing the local law, as well as before that, a resolution setting a public hearing on it.
Thank you, John.
Sure.
Bert Little Bird told me that we have some good news from our finance director, Rick Snyder.
Well, the good news was that in last week's bond sale, we were able to achieve a really great rate. As you watch the stock markets go up and down, that actually contributed a lot to bond rates settling prices high and yields low, so that we were able to sell our refunding bonds at a savings of $2.4 million. So I'll be bringing a more detailed report to you that gives the interest rate and the net present value, but I did want to let you know that waiting from the summer through August and September and October, when we had first thought we wanted to float the bonds, we were not able to get everything together until the financial statements were done, and that took longer than expected. So we were able to achieve a significant savings in refunding the 2005 bonds, the 2007 bonds, and the 2010 bonds. So that's all good news, and I will be bringing a more detailed report at a later date. And today we sold new money bonds for some new projects and some new bands, which are short-term notes, and we were able to lock in at some very effective and good rates for that. I don't have those rates in front of me, but I can tell you that the short-term note is about 0.24% in that vicinity. The long-term bonds, which are 15-year bonds, are around 2.25%. Once again, I'll be giving you all those facts and figures in hard copy so you can study it. And these are good interest rates, and I'm just glad that we were able to hit the market at a very good time. And my second item that I wanted to bring to your attention, if you turn in your red folder to the sales tax receipts, this is a report that shows you the first page is a 2014 sales tax distribution summary. This report will show you where we are at the end of September, which is the end of the third quarter. And if you look to the middle column that says percent change, a few numbers down, it shows what the total collections are for the quarter. The percent change is 2.23% up compared to last year. So that's just looking at third quarter last year compared to this year, 2.23% increase in just a quarter. If you move down to the center of the sheet where it says county, all the way over to the right, we're looking at the allocation of the county's portion of sales tax receipts. The year-to-date distributions for the county's portion total $24,980,511, compared to last year at $24,212,048. This represents a year-to-date increase of 3.1%. According to the sales tax distribution summary, we are now at 76.1% of budget. So being three-quarters of the way through the year, 75%, we're now at 76.1. So compared to last month when we told you we were about 1% down, we were now at this point in time about 1% over our budget projections. All good news. And if you flip over to the second sheet where we look at a historical reference for the Tompkins County sales tax receipts, the second column is the county share or the county only share, and we have gone all the way back to 1997 to show you the proceeds. The last 6 years, we break it down by quarter, and if you move down to the very bottom of the sheet under the county only share, you can see that for the third period, there's that number again for the third quarter, $8,643,743. And that, once again, quarter to quarter is a 2.23% increase. And historically, this is the highest third quarter on record, and it's also the highest quarter on record. So,
what did you do?
I don't know. I just...
We don't want to know.
Work the magic.
Well, thanks.
And wanted to bring you the, some good news, mainly because all year long we lag behind in sales tax till we get to around this point in time in the year. And I haven't been here long enough to be able to speak from experience, but I have gone by the records and can tell you that usually in the last three to four months of the year is when you play catch-up and we begin to pull ahead a little bit as we have as of the end of September. So we're just hoping with optimism that we'll continue on through the rest of the year and through the fourth quarter with good sales tax figures to present to you.
Thanks, Rick. Questions? Resolutions to be added and withdrawn. Peter?
Yeah.
You're going to withdraw that resolution?
Which resolution?
For the bylaws.
Yeah, didn't I do that?
I thought, well, okay. I just thought we'd do it officially here. All right. Anything else? Jim?
Yes, I would like to add the resolution that Jonathan Woods talked about. And what I'm trying to add is authorizing a public hearing on local law, repeal of local law, number 3 of 2014, a local law overriding the tax levy limit for 2015. We are in the position of having overridden the tax levy limit in May, June, sometime. Now, as we move forward, this is one step in the process that Jonathan was talking about. So I'm hoping to add this to the agenda. And it is the setting of a public hearing on November 6th.
Second first from Brian. Go ahead. Who wants to speak? Carol?
Well, I have a question. I think it's for Jonathan. I've not understood the time frame for doing this. We haven't fully finalized our budget, and even after the public hearing, we'll be hearing from the public. So what would happen if we were moved by something that we heard to change, you know, I'm not expecting this to happen, but if we did hear something that caused us to then raise the budget, what would then happen?
Okay, well, I was going to answer, but Joe wants to answer, which is even better for me.
I don't want to, all we're doing at this point is adding it to the agenda. It'll come up again. So I don't want to go into a lengthy thing.
I'm just wondering if now's the appropriate time to add it to the agenda or if it's more appropriate to wait and do it at a later meeting.
My answer is no.
No meaning it's not appropriate to add it at a later meeting.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, I guess before I feel prepared to vote on whether to add it tonight or not, I would be interested in the answer to that question.
Johnson,
well, I can. Let me try, and Jonathan can bail me out if I'm not right here. This is just to get it on a public hearing. Public hearing will be November 6th. You will not take action on this on November 6th. You'll have an opportunity to hear from the public at a public hearing after the 6th. This will come on the legislature's agenda in the second meeting of November, the same night that you will take up the budget itself. By that time, you will know if the budget is where it is right now. This should happen right before the budget is passed. So we feel most confident. And Jonathan has said The really important cutoff date seems to be before the finance director certifies the run of the cap. We think for safety's sake, it would be better to do this one right before the budget itself is approved. So the rhythm is better, but it'll be the same night.
Okay, so we're not passing the repealing our law tonight. We're just setting a public hearing about whether to repeal
exactly
the law.
Exactly correct.
Thank you.
I believe I was very clear when I said that.
Okay. We really need to debate whether to add this or not, because we'll come back to when he moves it on his report. I guess so. Peter?
Do you have something to show us? Is it in the packet?
In the folder, I think.
It's in the folder.
Huh?
It's
in the folder. Okay.
It's a public hearing.
Awesome.
I heard Jonathan say that it needs to be done when the finance director certifies the budget is below the cap. But I don't understand. The finance director can't do that until we vote on the budget. So it seems to me that we should not be voting or having a public hearing even on this until we get closer to that magic date. And we do have thereafter time to do it. We meet in December as well as November. So it seems premature to me based on what Jonathan said.
We've been moved and seconded to add this proposal to the agenda. All those in favor of adding it, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? We have two against.
I'd like the minutes to show why I'm voting against it, please.
Okay.
And I would like that also, to know why anyone voted against it.
Okay, let's...
Mike?
Yes?
There's something from me in the folder called Proposed Amendments by Legislator Kiefer. When I spoke with... legislative staff, I had intended to move this as something to add to the agenda. And since it's not been presented that way, I'm confused because I was prepared to do it under the add withdraw part of the agenda.
You're talking about what? I have two things in my
Resolution G, it's described as proposed amendments by me. But I had intended it as a separate resolution to add to the agenda in the same way as the local law resolution.
So you want to move to add this to the agenda?
So I wanted to ask if that's appropriate or whether I was under some misunderstanding.
It seems to me that this is in the nature of an amendment to the existing resolution that's on the agenda. Is that correct?
Well, it would be a substitute.
Well, substitute for it. Then I don't see why we would need to add this as a second resolution. Once the first one is brought up out of committee, if you want to move to substitute, I'd recognize you for that, and it could be talked about.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Let's move to the consent agenda. I have one appointment. Robert, I believe it's Z, X-I-E, the Human Rights Commission. We have resolutions. I'm sorry, Peter?
I'd like to move that. Do we move these or not?
No. It's on the consent agenda, I believe.
Oh, it's on the consent
agenda. So it'll be voted with the consent agenda unless someone pulls it off. I guess you're right. So that's the only one. So I guess you could move it you're moving the consent agenda, which is only the appointment tonight. Been moved by Peter, and there's a second by Will. Discussion. Jim?
It's my information, and I'm fairly certain I'm correct, that this appointment went through the same process that everyone else did to be appointed to the Human Rights Commission. They were interviewed, and whatever activity took place during that process, Robert was treated the same way everyone else was going through the interview process and moving the appointment forward.
I can say yes to that question.
Thank you.
Ready to vote? All those in favor of the consent agenda? Those opposed? That's unanimous. I think that's the first one of these we've had with no resolutions on the consent agenda that I can remember. Well, then let's move to the regular standing committee reports. And first up is Carol Chalk with the Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee. Carol?
So I would, I think I'll start with moving each of the, in turn, of the two resolutions that actually did come out of committee unanimously, and I think we missed by an hour the time frame for it to have been printed up on the consent agenda. Move Resolution B, acceptance of grant from the United States Department of Transportation Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration to conduct a high-hazard pipeline inventory. And I so move.
Is there a second? Seconded by Julie Kiefer. Discussion. Carol?
Yeah, so I will just point out that this has to do with it's the Department of Transportation because it has to do with understanding where we might need to fortify pipelines against weather events or deterioration, and it's for an inventory, and it was non-controversial.
Kathy?
This looks like a $50,000 grant. Is there any funding from our side as part of this?
Ed, will you confirm that there is no local match? Is that a yes?
No. So the answer is no. There's no local money.
No, there is no local match.
Ready to vote? All those in favor of the resolution, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous.
And then I will also move Resolution C, which came out of committee unanimously, resolution opposing underground hydrocarbon storage adjacent to Seneca Lake.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dave McKenna. Discussion.
And, well,
go ahead,
at this point, I will just say that we had a very interesting presentation from Dr. Rob McKenzie, a committee. They were going to be here tonight. He came along with Joseph Campbell and Roxanne Bardaglio, and he expressed regrets. He was called to Washington and couldn't be here tonight, and if there are serious questions, I will read his statement about waiting until he can answer them.
Who else had their hand up? Jim Dennis, then Julie Kiefer.
Thank you, Michael. A few days ago, I was in Yates County and picked up a little newspaper that comes out over there daily, and they talk about robberies, murders, and county legislature work, and it's only a single sheet that you pick up
in that order, shop,
and whatever else goes on. They had an interesting vote. They voted on the very same resolution that we have or a similar document. They have 14 people on their ledge. They voted 12-2, as I'm hoping we will vote the same way, to ban the propane deposits underneath the lake or the putting of. And I thought there were some interesting things said there in this little article. One person noted that 200,000 people around those lakes get their water from the lake. And another person who identified himself as a geologist said that there's been a history of instability in those caverns for many years, not just 10 years, many years. And I, way back in 1978, before some of you were born, I was a candidate for the New York State Assembly, and unfortunately, I lost, or maybe fortunately that I lost. But I was in Yates County a lot, in Seneca County, and during that time in 1978, some geniuses from the federal government wanted to put nuclear deposits in those very same caverns, and they wanted to move them from Hanford, Washington, by train and car or whatever, and bring them to Seneca Lake and stick them under, in the salt mine. So that didn't happen. This shouldn't happen either. And I think we're in good company opposing putting propane gas underneath Seneca Lake or any of the Finger Lakes. That's kind of where I'm coming from.
Julie Kiefer.
Yes, I hope you will convey to Rob McKenzie how thankful some of us were to read his risk analysis. It was clearly written and well documented. I would like to suggest that copies of this resolution also go to Seneca County and in particular the village of Watkins Glen.
I would consider that friendly. Who seconded it? Dave?
Dave.
Is that friendly?
That's friendly, okay.
And anybody who needs a quick summary of Dr. McKenzie's risk analysis, it is on packet page 26, the fourth paragraph down. There was just no question. This has nothing to do with any other position anybody might have about gas and methane or LPG. It was really purely numbers. Over 40%. He looked at the actual accident rate from trucks, rail, and salt around the country, and just merely reported the statistics.
Will Burbank.
Well, Carol said most of what I was going to say. I found the presentation committee very, very compelling, and I guess I had been under the misimpression that this was sort of a local issue for over there, you know, but I realized that the transport will affect the entire region, and so I'm very glad we're acting. That's it.
Kathy Lou Herrera.
Thank you. I liked the report. Just if y'all would let me just read two sentences from it that really struck me. He's just talking about the truck transportation part, and he says the most serious risk in LPG truck transportation is tanker truck crash with tank rupture and explosion. Does this sound familiar? It has been speculated that if such a truck were to lose its brakes on Route 14S downgrade, which y'all know is very steep, at the edge of the village of Watkins Glen, the relatively heavy propane gas would again flow like a liquid into the town and cause a conflagration. Then he goes on to say, a similar truck event happened in Ithaca on June 20th, 2014, when a car carrier reportedly lost brake power on Route 79W, crashed into a building, killing one person, injuring others, and burned in the heart of downtown. The resulting fire didn't involve propane, and it was promptly extinguished. Then he goes on to talk about how this truck crash would be considered, if it was LPG involvement, extremely serious. And at the end in the summary, basically, he says it all. He talks about how, okay, these could be independent things he's discussed. The truck events, the trains events, and then he talked a lot about the caverns events. All of these, they're not contingent upon each other, so they can be considered independent. And he says, combining the three independent probabilities, the likelihood for an LPG disaster of serious or extremely serious consequence within the county in the next 25 years is more than 40%.
Carol, I think you had a communication from our absent legislator. Did you want to mention that tonight?
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, she's not here to give it herself, but she did ask.
This is Martha Robertson.
Martha Robertson, and we all received this email. It was directed to Kathy Covert. Dear Kathy, I will be unable to attend the legislature meeting. It was tomorrow night. She wrote it yesterday, as I'll be out of the county. My regrets. I'd like to let folks know that I fully support Resolution 5142, this resolution, and I'm glad that Carolyn Peake on her behalf, I'll add Dr. McKenzie, have brought this important issue to our legislature. So she asked me to read that and wanted folks to know.
Anyone else? Ready to vote? Peter.
It's too bad that they don't have the that wonderful thing that they have in Congress, namely paired. Two people are paired, one to vote yes and one to vote no, and they're not there, but we don't. And I also am sorry that you can't abstain from votes,
So I understand I have to either vote yes or no, and so I'm going to vote against this resolution. I just would like a couple of minutes to explain. My whole background convinces me that these kinds of events are extremely complicated to understand, and they're not for the people sitting around this room to make any comment about. We can, we are engulfed in propane. It's carried around by trucks all the time. Nuclear waste is carried around by trucks. We generate nuclear waste constantly. And it is believed by the people who have the responsibility to guard the country and its people from disasters that these are appropriate things to do. And I myself don't know enough to be able to decide whether or not those people that have made that decision, whose job it is to make that decision, are sadly mistaken or not. And I simply can't bring myself to either vote yes or to vote yes on this resolution for that reason.
Okay, ready to vote, folks? All those in favor of the resolution, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? We have one opposed. Thank you. Carol, anything else?
I urge people, even though we've already voted, I urge you, if you haven't actually read the report, to read it. It was performed as an independent analysis without a position. We did other business at the committee. We heard a report about the draft New York State Open Space Conservation Plan for 2014. Katie Borghella is our representative on that body, and our open space and parks and some of the trail proposals fared very well in that. So currently Tompkins County has a whole list of projects that is included in this year's plan. We heard from the Water Resources Council and have an annual report from them, very concise, well-written summary of all of their activities on our behalf. And I'm going to take these out of order. Dan Klein brought us an interesting discussion, introductory discussion about further action on the improper reuse and disposal of fracking waste. Those of you who were on the legislature at the time will recall that we passed a resolution here concerned and saying that Tompkins County would not use waste, most typically brine, salt brine, from coming up from Pennsylvania from the Marcellus Shale drilling on our roads. It's also used at construction sites to keep down dust, so at our facilities either. And but we didn't feel at the time that we were ready to speak on behalf of the rest of the county. Since then, there are a host of counties and towns throughout New York State that have passed actual laws rather than just resolutions concerning their own activities, that this material is making its way into the market, it's being sold, it's a health hazard, it contains radioactivity and toxic chemical byproducts, and people are unwittingly, but it's not necessarily labeled, either for town use or apparently it's being sold now for private driveway and parking lot kind of use. And so there are places around the state that have passed laws. There are templates. Dan presented a legal opinion that was a concise legal opinion that the attorney for Westchester, and then the resolution that he thought was the most appropriate for us to look at happened to be a two-page resolution from Onondaga County. The next step on this, as I understand it, is to go to TCOG and just make sure there aren't concerns on the part of our towns that we would be stepping on their toes at all, or that this would be supported. We know a whole lot more than when we passed our own resolution in 2012. And so we may be revisiting that issue, but it was an introduction. We talked a bit about Dooley's concerns about last month in our, was the last meeting, in our packets, we all got copies of a letter that was sent to the EPA and the Army, because the Army Corps of Engineers is active in this issue, that was sent by NYSAC on behalf of counties in New York State about the changes that are being proposed to the Clean Water Act. The U.S. Federal Clean Water Act is proposing a broadening of the definition of what bodies the Clean Water Act would apply to. And our county wasn't asked, but there was a resolution circulated, and some other counties throughout New York State weighed in with big concern about this as adding bureaucratic burdens to our local governments without producing any measurable environmental benefit. And so Dooley was going to come and ask us to weigh in. The committee was willing to do that and would be willing to do that in the future if we had some. Nobody else felt prepared to actually write something. So if there's something, if you can find something out there, I think there was some appetite for bringing it and even a willingness on the part of the committee to meet briefly. It would be before our photo at our next meeting. If that's appropriate. And should I take a question on that one first, or because I got one more item?
Can you roll up and then we'll ask questions?
Yeah. Well, then we heard a presentation and received some materials from Ed Marks. Ed, since you're here, would you want me to try to summarize this, or would you like to come up and have the opportunity to tell us a bit? I will just say that as our planning commissioner, who's been asked over the past 10-15 years to work on the issue of climate change and bring us actions in the past, which culminated with the passing of our greenhouse and gas emissions plan, but being asked to work on many, many activities related to our concerns about climate change. He was coming to us not with a resolution, but just an initial discussion about the fact that it was easier to pass our aims and our goals and our plans when it felt like this was a problem that we were going to be faced with much further in the future, but that we are now being asked to make decisions for our community related to the build-out of fossil fuel development. So this is the contentious part of gas and further carbon development. That's proposed. We're learning now throughout our own community, portions of our community, throughout the county, throughout the state, and really throughout the Northeast. I don't know if people saw there was there's an op-ed in the Washington Post yesterday about projects throughout the Mid-Atlantic. And so Ed was coming to us with the concern that, boy, you know, the rubber is meeting the road now. Push is coming to shove. And if we want to meet our climate goals, which is 80% reduction by 2050 and 50% by 2030, that we can't make it if we continue, if we build new infrastructure. It's a tough issue. It's really tough. We're hearing about this from various sides. We had about 30, 40 minutes of public comment. We had a little bit of committee discussion. We didn't come to conclusions, but it is a concern. And some members of the public suggested particular actions that we might be able to pursue. Would have to do with the awarding of county money or county permissions. But, you know, there are things that Ed was encouraging us to think about and figure out how to address as we move forward. So that...
Thank you.
That's...
Thank you.
Where we went.
I have a question from Dooley.
Interesting.
I wanted to tell Carol and let everybody else hear that at Monday's Water Resources Council meeting, I brought this topic up, the redefinition of waters of the United States. And the WRC's Wetlands Committee is going to try to schedule a separate meeting just to review the Federal Register document and forward any comments they might have to our legislature, which would mean to your committee, presumably. I believe the deadline for commenting on this document, these proposed changes, is November 21st. I hope I'm right, because that would allow it to be put on the November 18th legislative meeting. So there may be time to put it through your committee in a more comfortable way. But I won't know anything until in the Wetlands Committee meets.
Right. Well, the committee did express willingness, if, you know, a sense of the committee that there was concern, and we would be willing to at least meet and consider something.
It would be better if it came through the Water Resources Council. The other thing I wanted to comment on was your statement about Ed Marks's position paper. My way of looking at the climate situation is it doesn't start with where we are now and what we can do in the future. It looks at where we are now in terms of how much hydrocarbon fuel, oil, gas, are in the ground now. And if we really are serious on behalf of our children in wanting to avoid reaching a level of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere that will prevent us from reaching the point where there's just automatic climate feedbacks and things go out of control, we really can't afford to have any more of the fossil fuels in the ground taken out and used. They have to stay where they are. And if you start looking at it that way and then thinking, how can we make that happen? Because it has to happen much sooner than we thought a couple of years ago even. We have a different challenge, and that is to keep our good businesses here with their good jobs and find them other ways to replace the energy that they're now using, which is gas probably, with something else. We don't know what – I don't know what – for example, BinOptics is using gas for. But depending on what it's being used for, maybe we can help them find another way to continue their processes. So I think that Commissioner Marks has done us a big favor by raising this topic. It's a very difficult topic, and it's one that it's much easier not to face.
Jim Dennis.
The document that Ed wrote, has everyone received a copy of it? Carol?
I,
has anyone not received
not
a copy
sure.
of it?
But if you would like one, I will.
Yeah, I think everyone on the legislature ought to take a look at it, because I think, you know, there's a discussion going on here that is, you know, very interesting to me as a member of the IDA, and We just granted BinOptics a tax abatement for 7 years. They're talking about building 90 jobs on top of the 100 or so they have And the question asked is, what are they using the gas for? Well, number one, keep warm. And number two, you know, that's an answer that we can generally find. But I think what you have to consider as you think about all of Ed's thing and moving forward is that if we're in a situation where we're not able to power job producers, potential job producers, then we have a problem, I think. And we have to, it has to be a balanced approach. There has to be one hand thinking about the positive things that in terms of climate change, and then on the other hand, how moving forward, how do we produce jobs, keep jobs, do the kinds of things that has made this county have sales tax increases of, you know, start off, and if you look at 09 and then look at 14, the kind of numbers that we have, because we have a vibrant economy, and that's been because people have gone and put money at risk and developed and produced jobs. So I hope that's part of the discussion as we move forward too.
Mike Sigler.
I mean, I will say
everyone
this.
Should get a copy of Ed's story.
I agree. I mean, everybody should have a copy, because I mean, this would, I mean, as I saw this at the committee, would basically end all your plans of development that you want to do in this county. You want to build affordable housing up by the hospital? That simply isn't going to happen. You want Neighborhood Pride? They want to build affordable housing on Neighborhood Pride property downtown? Simply not going to happen. I mean, you can go through the list of all the projects that we were brought by the downtown partnership. Six hotels, all of that, they're out. They're out of gas. So, I mean, that's kind of where we're at. I don't really understand this direction that the legislature, not the legislature, but certain members of the legislature are taking on this matter. It just seems to me we have invested so much money up by the airport to have a development area where we're trying to attract businesses. And now we've got members saying, no, we don't even want to put a pipeline to power that area. I mean, we have a sewer system up there. We've redone the road system up there. Everything we've done, we've tried to do nodal development in this county, and that is one of the nodes. And we're saying, well, forget about the millions we've spent there. We think that there's a better way or something, without even consulting the developers and what the developers are thinking. So,
Carol?
I expect a long discussion on this.
So, I may ask Ed to come up here in the end, but I think that the nature was not let's just stop development. The nature of the memo and the discussion was had more to do with the amount of time and effort that we've put into researching and encouraging alternatives and what's called in the field demand response. That do you really leave it up to the individual new developer to solve this problem, or is it a countywide issue? And are all of the things that we've worked for in the last 15 years, do we need to throw them out the window, or is it possible to more precisely, I'm reading now, more precisely define the area where the deficiency exists, identify actions that could reduce demand from current users through the efficiency improvements we've been talking about for years, and evaluate the feasibility. Are we at a point, as many people are saying that we are, where it is feasible to switch to renewable sources for some energy needs, and thereby make sure that there's enough of the current resource for uses that really need that, and yet the new resources that you're putting in would be the truly renewable resources that would community-wide solve the issues. And that, I think that was the nature of the discussion and where Ed is asking us to go with this, not let's just leave Binoptics. Nobody's saying let's just leave Binoptics out on their own. So, but Ed, do you want to say anything more about where you'd like to see us go or whether he was not suggesting policy. He was bringing to our attention the fact that that the aims we've talked about we can't achieve.
Carol, I think this whole topic is going to take a lot more discussion than we have time for tonight. I have Brian who wants to speak, and Jim would like to have a second chance to speak, and then I'd really like to be able to move our agenda on. Brian?
Yeah, well, I'm sitting here listening to a passage. I'm assuming you're reading from the document that Ed created that I haven't gotten. I really don't know why we're having this discussion now. As far as I know, there's no resolution.
It's a report out of her committee.
Okay. And the report was made, I guess, but I'm just curious. That's all.
Jim?
Let me be very clear. Ed, as the commissioner is doing what he was asked to do, and he has written his feelings, and it makes for discussion. From my point of view, every department head could write their feelings and write what they view, and that's what I want them to do. But then it becomes part of all of us around the table to deal with those kinds of things, and that's where we, as Peter says, we get to choose even whether we're smart enough to do it or not, because the only qualification for running for this place is to be a resident of Tompkins County, as far as I can remember.
You've got to be 18.
Yeah, 18, right. So my comments are not aimed at Ed. I think he did what he was supposed to do. It's a starting point, but the discussion now has to take place here.
Okay. Can we move on?
Well, we're sitting here talking about Ed and he's sitting in the back of the room, I just would like to ask him if you feel moved to say anything now.
That's what I was trying to avoid, Carol. That I don't think Ed.
Well, it looks like Ed wants to respond.
Very briefly, this is an ongoing discussion, and it was intended to raise the issue and raise alternatives that should be part of the discussion. It was certainly not intended in any way to suggest that we should put a cap on development in the community. Simply thinking about going forward how we best meet our energy needs for the future, and that we will be needing to start making decisions. As time goes on, the time for making decisions gets shorter, and we need to be starting to think about that. And we had the same discussion at the TCAD Economic Development Planning Committee yesterday, and there is this dialogue occurring, and we're working towards bringing different perspectives together to come up with an approach that works for everybody.
Thank you, Ed.
And then I will just wrap up by saying that we dealt with all of these issues that you've just heard us talk about and pass with 40 minutes of public comment and only ended 5 minutes late.
Mike, do you really need to?
I'll be very quick, yes. I just want to reference the fact that this is not happening in a bubble, that this thing was not presented just out of nowhere. This legislature not 2 months ago voted that it did not, I think it was 2 months ago, that it did not want any new natural gas infrastructure in the county. And people at the time said, no, that's not what this means. And Peter Stein stood there and said, that's what this means. It was like line 24 and 25. We just wanted to take those two lines out. No, couldn't be done. And now I'm hearing, oh, no, that's not the context we're looking at this in. This is just, this isn't even a policy paper. No, I took this as a policy paper. So you can say that all you want, but that's what this legislature said, not 6 months ago. So.
All right, we'll move on. Thank you, Carol, for your report. I can tell you a charter review committee has not met since our last meeting in the legislature. We meet again on November 5th at 3 p.m. Can we go to budget, capital, and personnel committee? Jim Dennis is our chair.
Oh, absolutely. Let me begin by Resolution D, adoption of amendments. This should be easy. Adoption of amendments to the 2015 tentative Tompkins County budget and capital program 2015-2019. And I would move that.
I have a second by Kathy Luz Herrera. Jim, could you, for the people at home, could you tell us what the substance of this resolution is, please?
In the major resolve, what it really talks about is we are talking about a tax levy amount of $46,195,453, resulting in an approximate tax levy increase of 2.5%, and a countywide average tax rate decrease of 0.45%. And it results in an increase of $8.67 on a median-priced home assessed at $165,000. And what it means to me, we are operating, we started out at 2.34. That was the county budget the county administrator gave to the expanded budget committee. And we were operating with an assumption that the tax cap was 2.65. And during the process, September and October, we learned that our tax cap was somewhat over 3.1, I believe, 1.4, I'm thinking. And we ended up with a 2.5% tax levy. And what that really means for taxpayers is whatever their increase is over last year's amount, they will get refunded to them under the program that we're presently operating under. And I am not making statements about is it good, is it bad, who proposed it, who doesn't like it. It's the one we're operating with, and this is our first opportunity to do this in Tompkins County. My sense is that it's something we should do, and we should see how it all works out. Next year, but if we adopt this budget at 2.5 levy increase, we are in effect moving forward for next year, putting ourselves in a positive light when it comes back to start building the budget in the future. We have literally credit for not moving to the cap, to the 3.14. I think we were able to, in this budget, satisfy the needs of departments. People will disagree. We have cut nothing. We continue to have all of our services operating at a fairly high level. We have added some things, 160K, I think it was, over the expanded budget committee time of 2 months. And I think as we come out of this at the end, with an increase, I mean, no, I am not trying to fool anyone. We're talking about a 2.5 levy increase over what it was last year. I think it's a good number for us. We've done something we were not able to do before, and we have a strong fund balance. We have departments that are operating, and we may even see a check come back from New York State to some of our people, albeit $8.69 or whatever it is, it will come back, and hopefully, if we follow the process that I think we need to follow. That's my comment.
Motion has been moved and seconded. Further discussion? Dooley?
Well, I am disappointed that we are not recognizing the need for more spending in our county. But I do find that the amendments that have been accepted are an improvement over the administrator's recommended budget, since they do support a little bit more. So I will support this, although I'm not happy with it.
Anyone else? All right, let's have a roll call vote.
Mr. Chair, may I just please get those numbers again?
Certainly. Jim, could you?
Yes, they are. Total tax levy amount of $46,195,453, an approximate tax levy increase of 2.50, and a countywide tax rate decrease of 0.45. And this action results in an increase of $8.67 on a median priced home assessed at $165,000. Okay?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Can we proceed with the roll call, please?
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Robinson?
Yes.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
Yes.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
Well, I'm having a hard time because I hate to send this out unanimously since there were things that I think were not
please
taken
vote,
care
Carol.
Of.
Just vote.
I'll vote yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Ms. Herrera?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yep.
Mr. Lane?
Yes. Does anyone want to change his or her vote? Clerk will announce the vote.
13 ayes, 0 noes.
Carol?
I'd just like to have my comment in the record that I do still have concerns that we haven't taken care of all our needs, and I'll look forward to hearing from the public.
Thank you.
Item E, Resolution E, appropriation of general fund balance budget adjustments authorization to execute a contract to support the undertaking of a workplace climate survey of county employees by the Kaleidoscope Group. And I would move that.
Is there a second? Seconded by Leslin.
Let me just fill in the numbers. Their WDIC had $10,200 in their current budget that was, I guess we'd call it rollover, leftover.
Unspent.
Okay. And we are adding by this resolution $21,000 to a program expense of $31,200 for the Kaleidoscope program. I moved it, I think, right?
Is there any comment on it or ready to vote? Dooley?
I believe I turned in some suggested changes. I can't remember whether they got acted on or not. I had asked that in line 12 the date of the resolution be added. I had asked in line 6 that the word continually come out. I'd asked that requests for proposals be capitalized, you know, not earth-shaking things, but I don't see any of those changes, so they don't exist. Do I have to make them as amendments?
They're not in my yellow, but we can certainly do that, can't we, Kathy?
Right. I did speak with Michelle this afternoon about making sure that they are corrected.
Okay.
And the date is December 3rd of 2013, so we did ask for that to happen.
With those minor edits, can we proceed to a vote? Yes.
We can.
All those in favor?
Aye.
I'm sorry, I need a short-form roll call. Kathy just told me that twice. I need a short-form roll call, please.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Any opposed? That's unanimous.
Thank you all very much.
Jim, I think you have Resolution H you added.
I do. I was waiting. Leslin made a comment. The item that we added, overriding the tax local law, repealing the local law that we passed early, overriding the tax levy, authorized in public hearing in local law number small f of 2014, repeal of local law number 3 of 2014, a local law overriding tax levy limit for 2015, and I would move that.
Seconded by Dave McKenna. Discussion on the motion to schedule the public hearing. Dooley?
I think I already asked to have my reason for voting against this in the minutes. Did I? But I think it's premature.
Well, if not, we'll make sure it's in.
Thank you.
Ready to vote? All those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? We have one opposed.
We have another meeting on October 27th at 4:30 and
4 o'clock.
I'm sorry, 4 o'clock, with three or four resolutions that it's the defibrillator devices. I can't say that three times fast, and some other end of the year things, and the repeal of the local law overriding the tax levy. So October 27th, 4 o'clock. And don't forget to go to Leslin's thing at 7 o'clock the same evening. And that concludes my report.
Thank you, Jim.
Okay. Let's move on. The old library committee also has not met, and we meet again on November 7th, and we'll be discussing the proposed RFP.
Mike, is there a time and place for that?
Hope so. It's 3 o'clock. I don't have a place.
I'm not sure if it's here or the old jail.
We'll let you know on the place. It's either here or the old jail.
Thank you.
Brian Robinson chairs our Public Safety Committee.
Thanks, Mike. The Public Safety Committee has not met. The next scheduled meeting is November 10th, 3:30 right here. And I think I asked this before. This is not a holiday for the county? November 10th?
No.
Okay.
Holiday's on Tuesday, Veterans Day.
What if you want it to be?
I will point out one thing. It wasn't a committee event or meeting, but Mike Lane and I each attended a meeting last night in the village of Dryden regarding their discussions on options of what to do or not do with their police department. I felt as though it was a very interesting meeting, a lot of facts, a lot of certainly community interest, but that is, like it or not, probably a topic maybe not only for the village of Dryden, but much broader topic moving forward, and they took it upon themselves to get a consultant and begin that discussion locally. I know that their police department, and I don't remember the exact figures, but for their village, their police department consumes more than half of their budget out there, and I'm sure they're not the only ones. So it's certainly a worthy topic, not only out there. They did lay out, what was it, 9 different options or something?
11
options, and they may not have captured them all. It's a very interesting discussion, and it was quite an interesting discussion last night. So I know that they've asked that the county also participate to some degree in some of the discussions moving forward with that, and we're certainly glad to do that. So.
Brian, thank you for attending that meeting out in Dryden also. And the options range from dissolving the police department to doing nothing. So you can think of everything in between, including cutting down on staff, reducing the hours of coverage, cutting back on equipment, a lot of things like that.
Yep.
Any questions for Brian? Leslie McBean Claiborne chairs Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee.
That's boy, when you say that way, I feel like I should say, woo-hoo. Sounds like one of those announcements,
that.
Basketball.
We'll
and now, WDIC will meet again in November. I'm very thankful to all of you for your support of the resolution for the climate survey. It's one of the things in our policy that we will be doing, and a great, great, great big thank you to Deputy County Administrator Paula Younger, our grants manager, Jackie Kipola, Leslie Moskowitz from the City of Ithaca, Kathy Luz Herrera, Karen Baer, who served on the committee to review the responses to the proposal asking for vendors for this climate survey. I came in at the for the finalists' interviews, but they had already done a lot of the heavy lifting. Especially, I do want to give big kudos to Paula for her efforts in drafting the RFP and getting it out. So thank you very much. And we look forward to working with Kaleidoscope and learning more about how our county is doing. So thank you.
Questions for Leslie? Thank you. We go next to Peter Stein, who chairs our Health and Human Services Committee.
Well, I'll report to you on the October 14th HHS meeting.
Please use your mic, Peter.
Sorry. I'll report to you on the October 14th meeting that HHS had. We heard five different presentations, which I'll try to quickly tell you what went on in them. The first was from Amy Hendricks, who's head of the Youth Services Department, and she described an issue they're having with the runaway and homeless youth program. We have two providers that support our runaway youth and homeless youth. One is the Learning Web, and they support young people who are living independently. And the other is Berkshire Farms, who support those homeless youth where there are interests in both the youth and the family in reabsorbing that youth into the family structure, this family structure. We, unfortunately, have lost all our funding for Berkshire Farms. The department is now working with Berkshire Farms to develop some sort of a transition plan for those youth who are receiving their services, and they're also seeking other appropriate sources for funding. And let's hope they find it. We heard from the Youth Services Coalition. Kathy Schlatter reported to us. I guess you're all familiar with the 211 Center, which is the social services equivalent of the 911 Center when people have various problems in what traditionally is in the social services department. They call 211, and 211 tries to find for the solutions for them or at least give them people to talk to. It's called the Information and Referral Call Center. The person who runs that, Ms. Manzanella, is leaving us and will be replaced by a combination of two people, Nancy Burston and Nicole Rulston. I believe these are two people who are she's not here. I believe that these are two people who are currently employed and will divide the responsibilities of this operation between themselves. And the call volume is now up to 13,000 calls a year, which I think that the 911 center is like 50,000 calls a year, isn't it? So it's sort of a third the size of the 911 center. It's a big operation. And just to tell you a little bit about what the calls are about, the greatest demand that people have is looking for housing and looking for health insurance. And she described some of the problems with looking for housing. Some landlords have policies that present obstacles which are hard to overcome for low-income families, having to give deposits before they'll rent the apartment and things like that. There are transportation issues, and some of them that she cited that I had never thought of is people that have cars but they're broken and they don't have the money to fix them. And in rural locations, transportation issues are desperate because if you're not in the right place to get a bus ride and you don't have a car, then you can't have a job. These are the two major problems that they work on and try to solve for individuals as they come in special ways. We had a lengthy presentation from Karen Baer from...
Has Karen?
Yes, Karen is behind me, who's head of the Human Rights Division. Karen discussed the re-energizing of the Human Rights Commission. there's the Human Rights Department and there's the Human Rights Commission, and they're independent organizations that are obviously connected with each other because they both serve the same ends. That Human Rights Commission is a commission of civilians, and when Karen took over, it had become quasi-defunct. It was down to three members in the committee, and there are, I think, up to 15 members. Of the 15 members is a full commission. It now has 14 members. She introduced to us Leon Lawrence, who was chair of the commission, and told us a bit about what that commission is working on. The major focus of the commission at this point has been examining and rewriting the bylaws of the commission. And I'm pleased to note that that effort was led by our old friend and associate, Pat Pryor. They're writing the bylaws for that. HHS discussed those bylaws and made some suggestions for changes, and then approved the bylaws and sent them on to the legislature. Between then and now, and this is about a week ago that this meeting took place, I discovered that there were some issues that remained unresolved, and that is why I removed them from the agenda. I believe those issues are not that difficult to resolve, and it's our goal to resolve them by the next November meeting of the legislature. Karen distributed a flyer that discussed the broadening of the Martin Luther King art and poetry competition, both the name, the theme, and the art forms, and called to our attention the 30 articles of human rights that are in the UN Declaration of Human Rights as the new focus and theme of their organization. On to mental health. Dr. Romanchek reported that Tompkins County has been invited to participate in a New York State Office of Mental Health pilot program for a collaborative treatment team approach for individuals experiencing their first psychotic episode. I don't really understand anything more than I've just read to you, but I think it's always nice to find us working together with other places to advance medical or any other science, and I'm pleased to report that. We had a very interesting presentation from the Health Department. Mr. Krupa introduced to us Nina Saili, who was the county's public health preparedness coordinator. And she gave a presentation on her work regarding what's called the medical countermeasures planning for the county. And what that is that's a plan that would be used in the case of a major medical outbreak from anthrax to Ebola, just to name a few familiar words. She described a series of centers which are called open pods or closed pods, which would be the location that would tend to the medical needs of each county resident. The idea is there would be a finite number of these pods. I gather the difference between an open pod and a closed pod is a closed pod is one that identifies the people that are going to go to that place, and an open pod is that a place that anyone can go to. What happens at these pods is that people get medicine, they get medical care, they get shelter, whatever is needed in the case of one of these disasters. And this pod apparently exists now, as near as I can tell, inside Tompkins County. They would have, and these pods then have access to, there's of course a state part of this whole operation, which has got places that have medicines and supplies and presumably food and lodging, and the plan unites our pods with the state centers, and presumably the federal government is involved also. It sounded very complicated to me, but it did sound like a complete network that was being described that would be our response to one of these medical emergencies. Oh, I should say that these pods are supposed to have the medicine, supplies, food, and lodging for every resident of the county. And that concludes my report. I should say the network will undergo a complete test exercise in March. Not quite sure what the individuals are, how they're going to be associated with that, but that's what we're told. And now our next meeting, I have no idea when it's taking place. It's the scheduled time is November 11th, which is for a county which is a county holiday, and so we'll have to find another time around that when all five of us can meet. And that concludes my report.
Questions for Peter? Peter, thank you for that thorough report. Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Kathy Lucerrera is our chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We met yesterday. It was the 20th. Yeah, that was it. And we did a few things. A couple of them ended up on the agenda for today. So I'm wondering if y'all wouldn't like to just go to those and move them, and then I can abbreviate my report. What's your pleasure?
Go ahead and move them.
Okie dokie. You'll see them on the agenda. They are F and G. I'll start out with F, authorization to execute a contract with Lobella Associates for bridge design services, Groton City Road over Fall Creek, pending committee action, and I so move.
Seconded by Dave McKenna. Discussion.
If I can just say real quickly in regard to that, our highway supervisor, Jeff Smith, mentioned that there were 10 proposals received and that following the review, the decision made was to contract with Barton and LeJudas. Thank you. There were suggestions to include additional information within the resolution regarding a review of Red Mill Road Bridge as part of the project. The resolution was ultimately approved as originally presented. Suggestions to discuss a potential bridge policy were made by Ms. Chalk. However, and Ms. Chalk strongly believes one should be developed. That's the discussion and events surrounding the resolution F. Wait, did I do that one right?
Yeah, you've moved F and it's been seconded.
I moved F, yeah. So I just wanted you to know that, and I wonder if there's comments or questions.
Wait a second.
Julie?
Yes, I don't think it was the Groton City Road Bridge that had anything suggested wording changes.
You're right. I read the wrong description. The description I read was for Resolution G. So I'll reverse them or say them again, whatever you want.
So with respect to Groton City Road Bridge, if any of you recall, I have felt for a long time that we have to pay attention to taking care of the most critical infrastructure. And so I will be voting against this. I don't want to discuss it, but that's why I'm voting against it.
Okay. Any other comments? So, again, the resolution in front of us has to do with the authorizing the contract for the Groton City Road Bridge, for the engineering contract.
Yeah, I'll be voting against this as well, but this is with Lobella.
This is with Lobella.
Okay. Right.
Engineering. Ready to vote. All those in favor of the resolution, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? I have two opposed.
Okay, now let's see if I can get this correct. I'm going to go for Resolution G, and I have comments for that right there. Okay, authorization to execute a contract with Barton and
LeJudas.
LeJudas, thank you. For bridge design services, West Mallaryville Road over Fall Creek.
Is there a second, please? Seconded by Leslin. Go ahead, Kathy.
Well, I kind of already read the description, so I'm just going to leave it there.
Okay. Dooley?
Yeah. In your red folders, you should have a copy of what I now have to present as amendments, or I wanted to make a substitute resolution. I attended the F&I committee meeting yesterday and got got to hear the discussion about what this project really is, and it was explained clearly in the memo attached, but it was not reflected in the title of the resolution or in the text of the resolution. So the amendments I wish to move are to change the title to make it clear that it's the West Mallaryville Road area over Fall Creek, because that's what the highway manager says it is, and that's what the project is described as for the people who bid on it. And to add a second whereas, which reads, whereas the county will study the feasibility of alternate stream crossing, I think it must be crossings, in the West Mallaryville Road, Red Mill Road area, because that's what's being done. And similarly, in line 23 and 24, it repeats what this project deals with. So since the highway manager thought that this was a more accurate way to describe for the public what's being considered, I wanted to make sure that we all had a chance to vote on the clarifying terminology. So I move it.
Dooley has moved it. Are you seconding it?
No.
All right. Is there a second for the proposed amendments?
I will second.
Seconded by Will. Kathy?
My comment is that I believe that it would be a bit of a mischaracterization to say that since the county highway superintendent thought this was a more accurate way of saying it, I believe that his response to you was in the affirmative when you questioned him about this wording, and I don't believe that he offered that explanation in the way that is being suggested. Personally, I would not like to see these amendments made to this resolution, and I'd like to ask my colleagues to vote for the resolution as originally presented.
Other comments? Carol Chock.
Yeah, I will just point
on the amendment.
Yeah, this is on the amendment. I'll point people to packet page 53 in the memorandum that Jeff wrote, lines 24 to 27. And, you know, often the legislature feels that we're just bringing wording changes. In this case, it is the scope of work and the suggestions for the changes to the scope of work were, I don't think, are accurately reflected in the resolution. These were accepted as friendly by Jeff. He can't accept them as friendly, but he agreed that it was an accurate description, and it was originally accepted as friendly by members of the committee, and then once we got into bridge policy and what should we do with that, that all got overturned. So it really, just in the interest of whether you like a bridge policy, think we should have one or not, whether you support this resolution or not, the scope of work should be accurately described in a resolution that we're passing. And so for that reason, I think that this is an appropriate way to amend it that isn't just trivial.
Dooley, then I'd like to speak.
I would like to say why I think it's important to characterize it this way. This is the first time I remember anything going through a facilities committee which reflects a somewhat different approach to projects. Instead of making a decision that this one is, we know all about it and this is what should happen, the highway managers recognize that there is a need in that part of the county, and there are two possible bridge crossing locations. One is open now, the West Mallaryville Road Bridge, which is a one lane, and one, the Red Mill Road Bridge, which has been out for a number of years. And in connection with this, figuring out where the best crossing is, he plans to work closely with Dryden, which is affected by this. And it seems like a really forward-looking way of approaching projects, to have a consultant look at alternatives and propose one. So I think that by adding this additional language, it makes clear that we are taking this rather new approach, and it's worth pointing it out to the public. So that's all.
I want to speak and then I'll let Brian speak. My concern is that we aren't abandoning forever the Red Mill Road Bridge. I'm a little concerned here that that we're saying that you can have one bridge, you can never have two bridges. We spent a lot of time and a lot of money on looking to redevelop the Red Mill Road Bridge, which serves a major agricultural business and employer in close to my district. It's in Bryant's district, actually. And I just would be very concerned by adding these amendments that it might say to our contractor, Barton and LeJudas, that that we think you ought to only go to one bridge instead of two. I just think that if we're going to have them look at it, that's fine. But I don't want this resolution to be pointed to, in my view, via these amendments as saying we aren't looking ever at two bridges. Brian.
Thanks, Mike, for confirming that I am now confused by all of this. This resolution is for design specifically of the Mallaryville Road Bridge. I guess what I'm hearing here is almost another study, like a feasibility study or something. but that's not what, at least what the title says. The title is Bridge Design. So I don't know. I guess I'm looking for some help.
Kathy, can you speak to that?
I'm trying to figure out my perspective on this as a way of saying it in a shorthand. For me, I liked the memorandum as a way of explaining the overall intent, and I believed and still believe that the original resolution as originally adopted did a good job of explaining the intent and what we were going after. I believe that with the additions, it's something along the lines of what Mike was saying. There's a way that it becomes a red herring, kind of like the way that Mike was talking about those sentences that you wanted taken out because you figured they might be used later to justify something that, you know, some of us could say it was paranoid, and some of us would say, that's what I was afraid of. For me, putting those in makes me afraid that it's going to be interpreted wrong later. And so for me, I'd rather not have those put in. I don't know how articulate I was, but that's where I'm at with it.
Peter, then Carol.
I've been on F&I for a couple of years, maybe more than that. And I am acutely aware of how little I know about the actual details of bridges and roads. They're much more complicated, and the way that what we write relates to the funding that comes in from the state and federal government. And I myself, I could vote either way on this as long as Jeff said it was okay. I have not heard that Jeff said it was okay to change this resolution, so I will vote against it.
Carol?
Oh, I'm really confused now because you're the one who accepted it as friendly, hearing that Jeff said it was okay. Each of these changes
well,
in turn.
I'm sorry, so Carol. I guess
I'm not in favor of necessarily spending extra money on bridges, but my interpretation of this was that the exact opposite of what you were saying, Mike, that this project was described as including both of these bridges in the study area, and that counter to the interpretation that we would leave one out by doing this, although I don't support necessarily doing both bridges, I think we're leaving one out by not making the changes. And I guess I'd like a determination from Jonathan. When the memo says on line 26 to 27, this project will study the feasibility of all these alternatives, but our resolution only mentions one of the bridges instead of both. Are we appropriately describing it in our resolution? if we want both areas studied.
John, you've been asking a question. Sure, go ahead.
Honestly, the resolution just speaks about design services. West Mallory Road Bridge memo gives a little more detail of it, but that sentence referring, the way I read it, study all the alternatives, it's referring back to all the alternatives for the Mallory Road Bridge, which includes closing, repairing, rehabilitating as a one-lane bridge. So I think it does make sense that that's referring to Mallory Road Bridge. And I don't think, I mean, it's a general resolution. It's for design services. And design services could include, could be pretty broad and often is when you hire an architecture firm for design services. So I think the resolution's fine. I don't think the additions are necessarily wrong, but I think design services covers it.
On the amendment, Jim Dennis.
I am going to call the question on the amendment.
The question has been called. Is there a second? Seconded by Peter Stein. All right, let's vote on whether to call the question. All those in favor of calling the question, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? I think that's unanimous. All right, let's go to the question on the amendment. The amendments are on the proposed amendments by Kiefer, and if you're in favor of those, you would vote yes. If you're opposed to those, you'd vote no. All those in favor of the resolution for the amendment, please raise your hand. I count four. Those opposed? Should be nine. The amendment fails.
I ask that my remarks explaining why this was should have been in here be included in the minutes.
All right. Back on the original resolution, are we ready to vote on that? All those in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Those opposed? One opposed. I want to take a time check. We're beyond our time for our break. We can go to a break. Depending on how long reports Will and Nathan would have.
45 seconds.
What's the pleasure?
I'm going to be very short as well.
With mine, I'm sorry.
Huh?
I'm not quite finished with my report.
Okay, but let me get an answer to that, and then we'll come back to you,
sure.
Kathy.
Keep going.
So do you want to push through or you want to break?
Yes, push through. Push through.
I'm
push through.
People say push through. Kathy, finish your report then.
Like I said, we met. And we did all those things, but we also got a report from the county administrator. I don't know if you talked about this, but it's the defibrillators. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. But we need them. We need some replaced, and we need some training. So Lee Shurtleff was here to tell us that we've already got over 100 staff members trained in their use, and we're going to replace the existing defibrillators within the sheriff's department. And we're also reaching... trying to culminate our goal, I don't know how you say that, achieve our goal of placing the defibrillators in all county apartments and buildings. So you'll hear a little more about that. We looked at the capital payment summary, and there was proud news from Errol Lamaro, the county, and I've got to eat my words here, but I will proudly. The county achieved its goal of silver LEED certification for the renovations at the health department. This is a big deal. I didn't think it would be possible. I thought we could build to them, but I didn't think we'd be able to get the certification. That's really good news and something that, you know, as y'all know, it was a goal of ours to try to at least build to them, and here we've got certification. Human Services building renovations are moving forward, and the contractor was selected last month. There'll be meetings with the staff located at the building, a timeline and impact of changes, et cetera. Solid waste. There was a resolution establishing the unit charge for the solid waste annual fee. We had a lot of discussion, and I think that our take on the resolution is one that you will see at the budget vote, probably. America Recycles Day. That will be November 15th, and it's pretty exciting because there's also a move to try and put fewer textiles into the waste stream, and it's a big deal because, as y'all know, by separating out recyclables, we get rid of a lot of waste going into the waste stream. Now, by separating out food scraps, a lot more, we're saving money, those of us that pay trash tags. But think about it. I don't know about y'all, but I have a bunch of old, moldy T-shirts
that I don't want to throw in the trash because I don't want to waste them, but I've got as many rags as I can use. Well, there's going to be opportunities to learn about the benefits of recycling and an educational piece on textile recycling at America Recycles Day on November 15th. There will be a collection point for textiles at the Tompkins County Solid Waste Facility near the St. Pauli shed, as well as at the food scrap recycling spots in Dryden and the newly opened recycling food scrap recycling spots in Wilson and at Cornell Cooperative Extension. That one will be on November 16th because Cornell Cooperative Extension site is open on Sundays. Anyway, staff will be there at the American Recycles Day celebrations at these locations on November 15th to provide further education and give out samples of the final compost material from the food scrap recycling and to talk with people about household textiles and recycling. And also there'll be a hazardous waste drop-off event at the recycling center. So if you want to visit solid waste, now would be a great time, particularly November 15th. Almost done. We did those two resolutions. There was something interesting about the Hanshaw Road update. Mr. Smith reported that noted that they had made an error in determining the appropriate size of drainage pipes at one area of the project. But guess what? We didn't even have to arm wrestle with them. They are replacing the pipes at their own expense for material and labor due to the area. If you think about it, there was a certain time period when there was a whole lot of water traveling and the timing wasn't too good, but it did come out good for us because they realized that the pipes weren't sized correctly. There is going to be a public information plan for Ellis Hollow Road reconstruction project. And we received a draft, and we're going to be asking for lots of input so that we can continue to use the positive feedback from residents that we got on the Hanshaw Road project. The staff at Fisher Associates is going to help us clarify how communications will take place with the public, and we will also have discussions with information technology staff to develop a subpage for projects that can easily be updated on a regular basis. This is good for us, and we're definitely looking at ourselves in the mirror, and we're going to work on this. I think other than the capital payment summary project and a brief report from Pine Tree Road and discussions on how to proceed with the project, I'm trying to figure out a way to condense this. We discussed options, and we're going to be discussing this further with partners to determine if we can get additional funding from the partners, and we hope that the project will continue to move forward. We meet again November 17th at 10:30 a.m. Are there questions or comments? Thanks for your attention.
Dooley.
One of the things I learned during the textile presentation is that leather is a textile. I hadn't known that, so it includes leather shoes and belts. Another thing that I learned from the highway manager is that there's a real revolving door among staff at the various consultants who bid on our projects, and often you will find someone who designed a project that you liked. He's no longer with that firm. He's with a different firm. I'm trying to remember.
Thank you.
The Pine Tree Road is well over budget that we were, and I don't know if the numbers are, I don't want to guess what those numbers are, but it's not a good surprise.
True.
That's all.
Thanks, Dooley.
Okay, thank you, Kathy, for a good report. Let's move on now to the Economic Development Committee. Will Burbank chairs it for us.
Well, thank you, Mike. I'll make this real quick. The committee has not met since our last meeting, but we will be meeting on November 3rd, the day before Election Day, Monday, in the old jail where we normally meet. And I'm still working up on the agenda, but there are two things that we're likely to be talking about. One, Mike has asked us to take another look at some property that we own up near the airport that For some time, we've thought might be a possible site for some kind of a development park or whatever. There are many issues to be considered, including the energy access and whatever. But we'll be hearing some different an update and a report. Secondly, I'm hoping to invite Diane Cohen, who, as you may know, is the director of Finger Lakes Reuse. It's the operation currently up in the Trip Hammer Mall, where you can take household items that still have usable life in them, whether it's a desk or a piece of wood or a lamp or whatever, and they instead of going into the waste stream, they're resold, sometimes fixed. And it's been a wonderfully successful operation. And they are in the process of raiding their new home, or one of their new homes, actually, which is the old Bosse's Alternative Community School down on the old Elmira Road, kind of across from Pudgy's Pizza, if you know where it is. It's a very, very large facility. They've got many, many plans on what they're going to do. I had the privilege to get a tour about a month ago, and Diane's going to come and give a report to the committee. It is very, very exciting what they're doing. So that concludes my report, unless there are any questions.
Jim?
One comment. I'm glad you're bringing significant elements in. I also think that we should bring in significant elements, actually. You said the reuse, significant elements, run by Alphonse Piper and Sarah Johnson on Plain Street. And they are in the business of when you rebuild your house, you take the things down there, and then they look to sell them to other people, and they have some programs operating. They have an intern program operating also. So they would be, and they're run by Historic Ithaca. And they would be good to also hear.
Okay, well, I'll check into the gym.
Okay, move on. Nathan Chittagawa chairs our Government Operations
Committee. Yes, the Government Operations Committee will be meeting next Tuesday, and most of our meeting will focus on discussion, though there won't be action during the meeting that comes from the discussion. And those two things are talking about the apprenticeship program. We sent out requests for information about that or people's comments on that, and we received some. And I've not had a chance to look over it all, Joe. I know you sent it today. And then there's
just two letters so far.
Just two letters so far? Okay. And of course, we do have time allowed for people to speak when they during the meeting. And also, Joe has worked on a summary for us just talking about living wage and the upcoming contracts for next year that we'll probably have to tackle. And so that will be what our agenda is going to be focused on.
Questions for Nate? Thank you, Nathan. Minutes of previous meeting, October 7. Someone want to move those? Brian, seconded by Peter. Discussion about the minutes. Those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? That's unanimous. Any unfinished business?
No.
Dooley?
I was opposed.
I'm sorry?
Dooley was opposed.
I voted opposed.
Oh, you were a vote. I'm sorry. We have one opposed. Any unfinished business? I'll take a motion for adjournment.
Yeah, where'd that come from?
Kathy, is there a second? Seconded by Peter. All in favor of adjournment?
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you to all of you for being here tonight, and for Kathy and Michelle, and for Marsha Lynch, who covers us, and I know still has work to do. Thank you.
Next Tuesday.